to take an intro.
Hey, how you doing, honey? How you doing today?
Good, good.
How was the kids? How about this one? You like this one?
Oh, yeah, that one's pretty.
That's pretty right there. I like the blue balls.
Blue Balls Pod.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Blue Balls. Season 10.
The blue ball. The blue balls.
Season 10. 10.
Like a burst of synchronizing Gundam energy. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got blue balls. My name is Jake Beckard, and I'm your intrepid co-host, and I'm joined this week, as every week, by my intrepid co-host, Mr. Trey Fillmore. Trey, how are you this week?
Oh, I'm doing okay. Hanging in there.
Hanging in there?
Yeah.
How so? Speak on that.
I wanted to tell you this story before the podcast, and I didn't, because I didn't want to say it on the podcast, because I think it's gross.
Oops.
But I'm going to say it anyway, whatever. It's what I'm struggling with at the moment.
Is it ear stuff?
No, it's not ear stuff, but it's another fucking freak health thing.
Jesus.
Last week, going to the dentist. You know, I ignored it for too long as a young guy in his 20s,
yep.
Smoking, whatever.
Yes.
I used to go religiously, then I dropped it. Now I'm like, I'm back. I'm going to take care of my teeth this year. That's this year. Did my cleaning, well, did a thing, and they're like, your teeth are super fucked up. And then did a cleaning, and they were like, you know what? Your teeth aren't that fucked up for someone like you. Like, I take excellent care of my shitty teeth, you know? So they're not, like, that bad. But I got a whole bunch of decay and shit going on, whatever. So it's like, before you get some fillings done, you got to floss every day really hard, make sure, you know, that your gums are healthy enough to go through with the filling and not be annoying for the dental person. Okay. I'm flossing every day. Today I floss. And guess what happened?
What happened?
A motherfucking chunk of one of my teeth flew out of my mouth like a goddamn Looney Tunes saloon gun bouncing off of everywhere. It bounced off my fucking trash can everywhere. Yeah, I guess that's gross, right? They're clean.
Yeah, no, it's not great.
But
it definitely put me in my it sent something through my nervous system to hear it about it.
So, yeah, sucks. Super uncomfortable.
Which tooth?
Back left molar.
Okay.
I think
okay.
All the dental work kind of like left it open to sneak attacks from the floss. So,
sure.
So
So you'll be suing your dentist.
Hungry right now. I've been like only drinking my calories, and
oh god,
I'm getting it fixed tomorrow morning, so
okay,
everything okay, will be
okay, that's good. Make a quick appointment. That's good, but that's nice.
Real,
who's your dentist?
I'm
give him a shout out.
I am at the reason I'm getting my teeth fixed is because my wife is now I get she's part of SEIU local now as part of her job, so I get the union
nice
dental care.
Sick. Amazing. Very impressive. I haven't been to the dentist for several years, and I am overdue as well.
Gotta go.
But I have always gotten... This will change. I'm sure this will change. I do take care of my teeth. I brush. I floss. Similarly, my health is buffeted by my wife, but mostly just because she started shaming me as soon as we got together for not taking regular care of my teeth. But I have always gotten away with not amazing dental attention and I don't know why it is, but I have a hunch that Dr. Weil, the Vienna, Virginia, the best.
Wait, you had Dr. Weil too?
Yeah, dude, we've talked about this.
Okay.
Not on the pod, probably.
No,
but for
shit.
Sure, we've. But didn't everybody in that town?
I don't know. He's the best.
The walrus. He's the homie. Shouts to Dr. Weil. We hope you're listening. But what I also got that Serena did not get, and I blame her weak-ass little baby teeth on this, is I drank a glass of milk every night for dinner.
Disgusting.
That's what everybody says, and I understand, you know, now as an adult having the relationship with milk that I do, that is gross to think of. It was 2%. It wasn't whole, which I think is okay. I would love it if people would pop off in the comments in the on Twitter, whatever, and let us know if anybody else was given this instruction by their parents. Because I didn't find anything gross about it when I was a kid. I enjoyed my milk at dinner. And I think, unless I'm just buying into dairy propaganda, that it's what's responsible for my above average teeth situation despite my below average teeth care.
You gotta go, hey man, this is a learning moment for me. Just go to the dentist. You don't want shit flying out of your mouth. I promise you. I could not sleep. I was so like fucking unsettled.
Oh, for sure. If that happened to me, yeah, it's on site. I'm fucking, I'm out. I'm punching my card.
I would say, just before we move on, because we should, because we've already grossed out. Everyone's already turned the podcast off. You know, yeah, who else? Right.
Mashing, ripping their headphones out of their pockets, trying to mash the 30-second button.
Do you know who else very quickly, who else is from our sweet little town of Vienna, Virginia, that I found out today because their performance at a world championship went viral today?
Who's that?
The best figure skater on the planet.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah. The best American figure skater. I was like, who is this guy? And I Google him, and I'm like, there's no way. But for sure.
Was he Madison?
Marshall. He was a Marshall kid.
Of course he was. Marshall. Boo. Hiss. Trey, I was at the
we're doing more small talk?
No. We'll move on. But I was at the Schubert Festival high school theater, the Schubert Foundation High School Theater Festival tonight for my day job, at which, you know, high schools, excellent high schools, bring like chunks of their performances to a Broadway theater, in this case the Winter Garden, where Back to the Future is staged, is running currently. And watching it, I couldn't help but say to myself, it's not the Cappies, it's not Kennedy Center, sorry, can't hold a candle. Not even close. That's all.
Still, I just, you know. Still when I peaked, when I won that award. Still the high point of my life.
It was a great, Trey won Best Actor in the regional Tonys, essentially, for his performance as Tevye the Milkmaid, or the Milkman, the Milkmaid. in Fiddler on the Roof, and it was an excellent performance, a justly deserved award, just like the justly deserved loss we suffered at the hands of Cincinnati this weekend, a 0-1 loss to the league leaders, or at least the conference leaders, the as of yet undefeated Cincinnati, FC Cincinnati. Trey, there was plenty of chatter about it, but I think the general consensus that I get from the pundits that we hang out with and follow and all that, is that this was not a demoralizing defeat. That having been said, it was another defeat on the road with no goals away, continuing a trend. What's your read on it? How is the hand-waving in this case justified, or has everybody just gotten Cushing-pilled?
I feel extremely similar. I think the bottom line, I'm cribbing this from Michael, who does social for the Outfield, who put it well after the game. I'm like, on the in a vacuum, you're on the road against the Shield winners last year, undefeated, best team in the East currently, reigning MVP. They only scored because their reigning MVP did MVP shit. And you only lost 1-0, and you were missing 9 guys, and you missed 2 guys on your defensive line during the run of play in a vacuum. That's a good, I keep saying it's a good result. It's not a good result. That's the best case. That's one of the best case scenarios we could have asked for. And then he smartly said, but we don't live in a vacuum. And that's the two sides of this coin, is looking at the match, it's dispiriting, of course, that this team can't get anything done offensively. But at the same time, stayed together, stayed strong, didn't give up at the end of the game like we're used to seeing this team doing on the road. I was happy with that. A lot of people stepped up that aren't normally asked to step up, and they stepped up in different ways. All of that is pluses. But as you said, it's just yet another road defeat for this team and yet another game where they can't score a goal. We have more losses than goals scored in this season. And it stinks, man. Like, the malaise is more of a fondant on top of a, a result that you can take. It is not the whole cake, but it is still on top and floating over everything. And that's the main takeaway from this match. We can get into the technicalities, running a new system, whatever, but at the end of the day, it's like a result we would take 99 times out of 100, considering the circumstances. But the team didn't seem too dispirited. It doesn't seem like we're spiraling downwards. If anything, there might have been some growth in some of the performance, but it's still disappointing to come on this podcast yet again and talk about yet another loss for this team.
Tell me, Trey, because I think that if we're going to blame it on anything, right? If we're going to have a scapegoat for this, it is of course the dearth of players on both suspensions, international breaks, and injuries during the match. Whose absence did you feel? Not international break, international duty. Whose absence did you feel most acutely?
Certainly. In terms of on the field play and how everything works together and their unique skill set, this is the game where you go, yeah, maybe Keaton Parks is important. I know he hasn't had the strongest season. Obviously, his last game with the red card was extremely silly. He put us in this situation himself with some reckless play. And so he gets zero credit for that. But the appreciation remains when you notice how this team simply could not, despite its many different times and tactics and ways they tried to add bodies into the a thin midfield in this formation, they simply could not connect to the front line or make any kind of dent in Cincinnati's back line in their defense. There was not a consistent level of pressure, and that the ball was given up too often. That players felt like it seemed like without someone to connect the lines, players felt like they had to do much more themselves. That they had to work themselves into space because they couldn't find proper outlets enough, or they just held on to the ball too long. And I think that's the majority of our offensive woes. I give Santi a lot of credit to some extent for how often he tried to drop back and make things happen, but his execution was awful in this match, and I'm sure he would tell you that himself. I don't remember if it was last podcast, but the podcast before where I said, we saw in our win, Hannes Wolf and Santi work really well in close quarters, and I said I want to see them do it farther apart on the field. I want to see them both dominate space individually and link up in larger amounts of space, and this game was like the test for that, and it didn't work. They don't have that level of connection yet. They both were making individual errors that were compounding on each other that led to multiple. There was no rhythm for any player on offense to get into. So I think not having that body in the midfield was important, and I think secondly, just stylistically and systematically, of course, not having Micha or Tavon at right back, it changed everything. We weren't missing necessarily their individual talents. We were missing the idea of a right back in totality, because it forced us to change system, which is fine. It forced Tanasijevic to play in that right center back role. And as a player who's cold to this team, cold to this league, cold to the traveling, cold to playing with chemistry with everyone and playing in this hybrid role, throwing it not as a center back, but in this interesting way we decide to play center backs in this formation. I think he didn't cover himself in glory in this game either, but I was not expecting him to. And so I would say that that was probably the biggest miss as a whole when it comes to the structure of the match.
Mm-hmm. Let me flip the question then. Who do you think showed up most impressively, and who do you think was most clutch in a, you know, sort of Frankensteined approach to the way that this team plays soccer?
Well, that's two questions, and I have two easy answers. I think James Sands was phenomenal in this game defensively. Mm-hmm. He was everywhere, you know, in a game where there was open space in the midfield and open space between both teams' offense and defensive lines and structures. James Sands covered everywhere. The only offensive opportunities we had is because of the work he did. And I was extremely impressed by his ability to cover space. We have not seen him put in a defensive shift like he did in this match. I mean, we're talking five interceptions, multiple blocks, multiple tackles, multiple duels won. Just, you know, he stuffed the stats. And also, it was evident in the way he played. Now, obviously, he's not a ball handler, and that became difficult for this team as well. But he certainly limited... You know, we have to look at Cincinnati. This is a team that is capable. This is a team that is a well-balanced team front to back and is a team that wants to control the midfield with players like Kubo and that other guy. I can't remember his name. It begins with a B. And they're not looking to play defensive in the midfield. They're looking to play possession. So having James Sands limit those two players' impact on the match, or at least forcing them... Kubo was insanely impactful in this match, just not in the ways you would expect him to be. That was all James Sands. And when it talks about coming in clutch, it's Matt Freese, right? That was a lot of people's pick for player of the match. I think he did a fine job. I think statistically it didn't jump out, but this is one of those games, you know, where it doesn't even out. It evens out later. Like the saves he was making were just because of the confusion and movement and chaos that was happening in front of him. Those routinely easy saves that he was being asked to make became much more difficult, and he had the quick reactions. You know, it was nice to see him sort of bounce back into a game where you know that he can hold it down. And he displays a high level of talent in this league. And it was great to see that in this match as well. Those were like the two players that had good games for our team, I think, maybe in totality.
Yeah, it's telling on a number of levels that the two people that you mentioned were the people who were most clutch on defense. And there's been a lot of conversation about... the fact that it seemed fairly clear on the pitch that this game was being played for the tie and not for the win. Hudson River Blue, subscribe, has had a reaction to a sort of like breakdown critique of the lack of offensive urgency that has become something of a pattern for NYCFC this season so far. And I'm wondering, this is the sort of pointed question, if you feel that the way that this team was coached, that like the emphasis on defense, the playing for the draw, is exacerbating that problem, such as it is, of a lack of urgency.
No, this team had no strikers. I'm not concerned. I mean, I'm concerned about our offense, but I'm not pointing to this game, right? I'm concerned about our coaching. I'm not pointing to this game. I'm concerned about certain levels of our defense for sure. I'm not pointing to this game. I think it's just this is a game that is interesting to analyze as a piece, as a whole picture of the season, but I don't think it's necessarily reflective of any issues that were underlying outside of, you know, the most evident. I wouldn't say like the lack of offensive urgency was, you know, the lack of offensive urgency is because we had no nine, we had no anyone in the midfield that could play in transition, and we're playing against like a really solid team, like it's on the road. So I'm not going to point to the lack of offensive urgency. In fact, like as I said earlier, the urgency we showed in this match was much higher than any road match we've played in the last like 7 months. So I'm not entirely concerned about the offensive urgency. But it's clear not having strikers on the field or midfielders to play in transition like is a problem.
Right, sure. But not a problem that is worth any particular level of analysis, given that it is ostensibly going to be resolved when we have Bakrar back, when we have Mijatovic back. Things should get better, cleaner, nicer. But let me ask more specifically then, because we can say, okay, we were sort of like, we were stymied in general, but the goal came from a single man. Operating as a single man, it was Lucho Acosta, and I'm wondering, what does it look like when a team can handle Lucho Acosta, and why was that? Like, what did you see in our defense that failed to accomplish that?
I think we handled them extremely well. How do you stop that? That his goal specifically, I don't know how you stop that. Like. The defenders back off of him a little? Yeah, because he brings the threat of you don't know if he's going to shoot where he shot the ball or pass to someone that's open, right? Because we were double-teaming him, essentially. And like, how do you defend the ridiculous dummy he had to start that run of play either? You can complain about individual personnel all the time, and I have, like, thoughts about how people have been talking about individuals on this team specifically, but... It's just pointless. I mean, we handled him.
Go ahead, Scott. Don't dodge it. What thoughts are those?
Okay, let's. Here are my mini rants, and we're gonna keep them short. Okay, and cool. I do want to hear.
I'll start the timer.
Yeah. Please do so. Like, clock me. I don't want to go more than whatever. There's like two rants, and one of them is split into two. And that first one is expectations. First half of that is Nick Cushing and the team itself, and this goes for the players as well. You know, they set the expectation early in the season, in preseason. This is a different team. We've spent a lot of money. We're going to be great. We've turned the page. I think that quote was used specifically. And now the way that this team is talking about itself is a lot more honest. And I appreciate that. It's just that the expectation was set way too high. And I think that's where some of the dissonance comes from and the discontent from the fans that is deserved, frankly. I'm mad, you know? So I wish that we were just as a whole, everyone, a little more honest when we were appraising how we thought this would go or how we would approach games like this, you know? And the second half of expectation goes to the fans. All of us were complicit. It's like... having to understand, like, it's how do you explain to someone that playing on the road in Cincinnati and only giving up that one wonder goal is a result you should walk away from content? How can I get that through someone's head? Like, with the players that we have, and more specifically the players we were missing, I don't understand how to tell someone that says this team is awful and that's not good enough. How do I explain to them that it is good enough? That I know where it comes from, of course. It comes from winning in 2021, losing your coach and best player halfway through 2022, the team not making certain investments at one point, and then making investments of players that just aren't ready to see the field, ostensibly, and having expectations set up and having those expectations cut down by the very people that set them up. Like, I know why people... are mad at this result, but it has to get to a point where you understand that this team is not good. It hasn't been good for a year and 3 months. So, like, when do people understand that this is not, like, this whole, I saw someone say, and this is everywhere, man. I went on any social media site, anywhere, forums, blogs, comments, whatever. I think I saw someone say, we're missing that European mentality that, like, not winning is not good enough. I'm sorry. Some of these players have won. They know what it takes. And this is America. Like, this league, the nature of it is, like, sometimes you're not going to be good. And that sucks. It sucks to be a fan of a team that's not good. But this team is not good. And I don't know how to explain to people, like, who are convinced this is a good team that's losing, when that's not the case. This is not a good team at the moment. And so you have to live with that, you know? And again, I'm not blaming anyone. I understand. And then offshoot of that, and my third and final point, is like how we talk about the games. This team is bad. It's not playing well. The players to some extent are not living up to their talent that we know they can. And we know that this coach, like every player has regressed under him, so that we have to live in that reality that this team is not playing well. If that's the case, like, I'm so tired of the conversation devolving into this guy good, this guy bad, this guy overrated, this guy underrated, this guy better than that guy not as good as this guy. It's boring. It's uninteresting. It's uncreative. It's not fun. Like, I, how many responses I get when I say, in this one particular play, with the system we run, three at the back, we know that this coach likes to rotate possession where it switches to a four in the back that's lopsided to one side of the field. I think that's interesting to talk about in soccer. It's unique. It's a fun way to watch the game, to understand that's happening. And when I say Tavon Gray could fit in the system pretty well defensively because he has the speed to track back as a right center back to cover some of those balls over the top, because you have to rotate quickly when you're switching between those two. It's a risk-reward style of play that we played. And all the comments end up being, Tavon sucks. Yeah, but Tavon sucks. Tavon's not good. He's overrated. That's not the conversation we're having, and it's boring. Like, everyone sucks. What do you want me to say? And I love when the conversation becomes, all the people on the field suck, and all the people on the bench are good. Like, guess what? We've done that song and dance before. But then when the people play, they suck too. And then the conversations switch. Well, the people on the bench now are good. I'm tired of conversations like that. I want to talk more about the things that work, the things that don't. It's not fun to talk about a bad team. Let's try to make it as fun as possible instead of just good, bad, good, bad. Okay, that's 6 minutes, right? Okay, I'm done. What do you think about those three points I made?
I think that they're all fair. I think that you're never going to be able to you're never going to teach a fan base.
No, of course not.
to speak more intelligently about soccer, but I think it's probably worth trying or engaging with it. I mean, a lot of the way that we talk about the match or the matches on this podcast are meant to be a little bit more like dig in. If we occupy a niche, that's what we're here to do. We're here to give you more complicated talking points than just good, bad. And I hope that we've succeeded in that goal. But ultimately, at the end of the day, what you want is somebody to grouse with or celebrate with, right? That's why we do it. So I can hardly hold it against anybody for just looking for like simple answers as to whose fault it is that we're not getting to celebrate more, you know? And I think sometimes it's right and sometimes it's wrong, but also that that folks have to, it's our job to hedge. Do you know what I mean? It's our job to look at multiple angles. I actually think it's the fan base's job to react emotionally, generally. And that because a unified voice on that, with that emotion, is one of the ways change happens. One of the ways in which things are identified that must be addressed, that cannot be brushed under the rug with a very good post-game speech, you know, or a series of very good post-game speeches. It's how the propaganda is resisted, ultimately, is, okay, it's not good enough for the fan base, so something new. It's not what the fan base suggests. It's never what the fan base suggests. It can't be, because that's always the dumbest option. It's like, I always think about, like, because it's not because anybody's a dummy, but because the aggregate voice ends up choosing or, like, you know, focuses on what seems like something obvious that is the first thing discussed and then done away with when you're actually talking about strategy, when you're actually talking about changes. But ultimately, I can't hold that against anybody. On the expectation side, I think you're absolutely right. I think messaging here was overly optimistic. I pulled up from the text thread that we're in, what you said. The retroactive expectation adjustment from him is killing me. Him being, of course, Nick Cushing. Like, you're the one that set our expectations, my man. That's a Trey Fillmore original, and it's exactly right. I think that's a really dizzying and frustrating part of being a fan of this team right now. But I don't want to dwell too long on discourse. Discourse is boring. Soccer is fun. Soccer is a good time.
Yeah, I had to get it out. It's just an observation. I'm not placing blame on anyone. I know everyone's frustrated. People I see normally talk about the game more intelligently. Are themselves devolving? I don't know what they're, you know, and I get it. Like, I myself fall into these things all the time. So it's just something to notice, I guess. I mean, obviously, I'm not happy to stew in it. But I'll get through it. I'm a big boy. It's fine. And I know people have their opinions. I just want to point out, I guess it's just a meta point out of what a bad team does to its fans, right? I'm more so pointing people talked really intelligently about this team when they were winning, because then you didn't have to go, that guy's bad, this guy's better than that guy. You can start going oh, we're good, this is why we're good, and everything kind of trickles down from there. So I'm looking forward to when this team is good again, of course, for multiple reasons, and that's one of them. That's it.
I think if there's one element of this match that feels particularly disturbing, it's probably Kevin O'Toole going out with an injury.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That feels like a really difficult... So Kevin O'Toole, right, the talk is he's just getting over his concussion from last year, and to go out with another possible probable concussion, really bad news for us, to say nothing of his brain. I'm wondering what, if anything... So two branching conversations here. One is it resulted in the sub in an MLS debut of Malachi McLemore out the thrift shop Jones, who I think brought at the very least a lot of energy and made a point an arguable point for his inclusion on future rosters, which is great. Would love more insight on how you saw his performance. But also, I'm wondering, what do we do without Kevin O'Toole?
Yeah, I think I was having this conversation earlier today, and I think it's more to be... The conversation has to be speculative more than prescriptive or predictive, right? Because we have no idea what Nick Cushing's going to do at that left-back spot. It looked bad enough that let's just assume he's going to be out. It's interesting, Malachi was subbed in and then Kevin got hurt. And so the adjustment, and I think it was a smart one, was to move Malachi to that left wing back spot. Not enough to really analyze it fully, right? Not too many touches, not a large expanse of the game. Likewise with Ojeda, right? We saw him... not too much to analyze at that moment. But as you said, the energy he brings, you know, I see it a lot like what we saw with Kevin O'Toole when we first brought him on. You know, this is an attacking right wing player that we brought in and it was highly touted before the draft. And then we draft them and then they end up platooning at left back. Like, that's what happened. And what did we appreciate from Kevin when he came on is like that energy, that willingness to go forward, that willingness to carry the ball. And like, that's what Malachi brought in this match too. Obviously I think the team sees it's extremely clear. I'm not breaking any news that Kevin O'Toole is strictly a left back for this team and that Malachi Jones is likely to be more involved with the offense going forward. But is Christian McFarland ready? He's 17. He hasn't played any pro minutes? Did we see him at the end of last year? I can't remember. I don't think so. So is he ready to play in Miami? I don't know. Against Robert Taylor? I don't know. Or Julian Gressel? I don't know. Or is it going to be Malachi Jones and we play three at the back again? Do we have enough bodies to fill three at the back? Because the other injury, frankly, is a little more concerning to me. And that's with Burke Risa. And I have no idea what's going on there because he came up limp, and it could be anything from a fucking, you know, muscle strain in his calf to a Achilles. I have no idea what it is. So at least Kevin's a little more definitive as bad. We're thin, right? And even though we're getting bodies back from international break for next match, we're still thin. And especially at left back, our thinnest position going into the season, I wouldn't be surprised if Nick Cushing wants to hybridize. It could be Wolf as a left wing back. It could be Malachi as a left wing back.
Yeah, I was going to run that Wolf simulation by you because it's a credit to Rip73 in the comments section talking about being interested in seeing Wolf in that wingback position with Ojeda in front of him working in a wide position. I don't know, but like, I, you know, my ass from a hole in the ground as far as putting Ojeda on the having Ojeda play more wide. But what do you think about Hannes Wolf, who has been certainly one of the more impressive presences on the field in these five matches, taking that spot?
Yeah, you miss his offensive ability that we saw very good flashes of in a few games this year. You break the consistency, right? Obviously, we have seen and we know that all these new players need time in those roles to kind of get chemistry with other players, and then you suddenly make him have to develop a level of repetitiveness and chemistry with whoever is going to play left center back, whether it's Burke or not, and the midfield, as opposed to, you know, Santi and whatever striker we have. That's a little concerning, but clearly he has such a high floor, and just in terms of professional minutes compared to a majority of this team, that maybe that dependability is what you want. But at the end of the day, and he's played there before, but at the end of the day, Nick Cushing is the one guy who sounded the most off of playing Wolf as a left back or left wing back. So as much as it's a very viable option, Nick Cushing doesn't seem convinced. So we're in talking points now, right? Is there anything else to talk about?
Are we? I suppose. No, I don't. I guess that's fair.
No,
it's a
you're right.
Speculative, but it's speculative on this match. Sure, I think it still counts as this match, but I am happy to transition to talking points because it is certainly that time in the podcast. Let me review all of my little noties.
Yeah, I just want to give a little shout out. Obviously, Julian wasn't, much like any offensive player, was not involved. You know, very mercurial performances from Santi and Julian and Hannes in this game. Just, not consistent, but Julian did show defensively, I would say, you know, a high level that we had not seen from him before. And I was impressed by how involved he was tracking down passes in the press, all these things. I at least we could take that away from his performance. I think that's the only other thing
absolutely.
I had.
Yeah, I got nothing. Let's hit the talking points.
Talking points.
That was the Talking Points theme song, and these are the talking points. Trey, the U.S. men's national team, another 2-0 victory for our third straight CONCACAF Champions Cup. This was, a CONCACAF Nations League win, whatever, the final. Who cares? We care. We care more than we thought that we were going to. A fairly dominant performance from the USA here across the board in both of the matches that have happened since we last talked about them. What do you take in terms of the future of the men's team here? Was a depleted Mexico not a real test, or was this another great victory that can go in the trophy case?
I thought it was weird, all the talk about, obviously, Mexico as a, this is their worst stretch against America ever. You know, I think we have like 5 or 7 straight wins against them, maybe 9. I can't even remember. Obviously, 3 major titles in a row against them. But I was a little confused at how much the American talking heads, like the ex-players and the commentators, were talking down about some of the Mexican players. Like, I don't know. They still got some talent. Like, I'm still scared of a lot of those players that were in Mexico. I think it's certainly a much worse pool than they're used to having. But it's not like we beat up on some small Caribbean nation like we're off to do. So it is impressive. A lot of people, and I think that's kind of some people's excuse to hammer home the narrative, which is probably like 70% true, that this USA team does not play, is more of a collection of, does not play like you would expect a collection of the parts to be when the parts are so good. I think that is for the most part true. I think that's what the team is just still constantly trying to work at. I would say the first half was pretty disappointing. I think that only having one shot on target until Tyler Adams' miracle goal is not good enough. Like, they should have been more into the game. The game was a little too open, a little too end-to-end, which I think does, you know, I think the Mexican players are not pushovers. I think that should be remembered. But this team does seem to play down to the level of ability that you think they're capable of. And that's a huge knock on Greg. Obviously, this is not, this podcast is not the biggest fan of Greg Berhalter, but you have to give him credit for making five changes to the starting 11 after an extremely disappointing Jamaica game. And it worked. All the changes he made worked. Obviously, tactically in the first half, didn't work that well. He made adjustments, worked out in the second half. And just Christian Pulisic is awesome, and we should be really happy we're watching him play, and that maybe he's not even in his prime yet, but he's in an extreme, he's one of the best players in Serie A right now in total, and he brought that. I mean, that shot attempt he had against Ochoa, just to move his body and legs and feet and toes to get in a position to shoot is elite. And I think that went unnoticed. Perhaps the most shocking part of the game is that after the game, Tyler Adams said, "I'm happy my son is here. It's his first game." And I said, "Wait, hold the fucking phone." Is he not the same 17-year-old we saw be like the best player for our friends across the river at Red Bull New Jersey? How is it?
Indeed, he is not.
How has he gone from like a 16-year-old, 17-year-old Red Bull player to a 25-year-old father in the span we've done this podcast? That is insane. He's still like a child to me, but he's not. He's got a kid. That's more than you and I could say. That was crazy.
No, I mean, I think that's a little bit the whole squad, though. Right? I mean, I think because of when we came to this podcast, we think of most of these guys as young guns, and they're not. They are in the prime of their career. But that's the thing. They're in the prime of their career. We are now in the stretch where they should be producing the kind of results and the kind of performances through the match that are definitional for a next level US team. And that's, I think, why all the teeth gnashing and hand wringing is that these kids aren't kids anymore. Right? They are the next generation, but the next generation is fully arrived, long since arrived. And it's great when we get moments like this that feel like arrival. I mean, like, the other person to talk about in this way is Gio Reyna, a son himself, but whose performance across this tournament has been exceptional.
Yeah.
It feels like it's maybe a little bit boring to talk about the Berhalter drama, but is it worth noting anyways that all of that particular anxiety seems to have been put to rest by his fluidity on the ball, by his multiple assists, by his like clutch position in the offense of the men's team now?
I hope so. I'm sure it won't be. People keep bringing up the World Cup. Like, God forbid a coach bench a player because they suck in practice and don't try hard enough. I mean, that was my biggest sticking point. Like, I'll knock Berhalter for the results, not for, you know, a player being shitty in practice and getting benched for it. That's a coach's right to do that. I don't know. But I hope that's over with. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious this would be the moment it's over, right? He came in as a sub against Jamaica and changed the game, and so did Haji Wright. Have to give him credit. And I have to knock Greg for not starting those guys when he should have started Haji Wright. I have no idea why. He was not even called up, insane to me. And then, you know, then Greg starts Gio. He obviously does all the good things and makes things happen and scores. And his dad is there. I think that's the biggest thing, is that his dad had a suite at AT&T Stadium in the final. So this must be it. Can we stop talking about it now? It must
be.
Yeah,
we can stop.
The players don't want to talk about it. The coaches don't. The Federation doesn't. Claudio is there. Gio's starting. Are we done? Gio's good. We know it. He seems to not be shitty in practice anymore. That's good. I'm happy he's maturing. Maybe it's been humbling that he's not getting any minutes for his club team. I hope so. I feel bad for him because, like, you can tell by how people talked about his transfer to Nottingham and everything that people still are looking at Gio Reyna as a spectacle more than a player. And, like, his talent is spectacular and worth, doting on, but his career is, like, we can turn down the TMZ a little bit, I think. And we can turn up the fact that NYCFC is 100% responsible for how Gio Reyna is, and we will accept no other answers.
Yeah, it all came. It all came from the boys in blue. We know that. We don't have to go on. We don't have to bang on about it. So then let's talk about Copa America. I mean, we've got a group coming up with Uruguay, Panama, and Bolivia. It's not the hardest group. It's not the easiest. Do you think that this team is showing signs that they can be seriously competitive in Copa America?
No, because that Jamaica match was they clearly underestimated what Jamaica would bring. In terms of, I guess that's not the right way to characterize that match. They clearly have not leveled up in a level of confidence and ability and chemistry that allows them to break down a low block team and a team that will concede possession. And Jamaica did beautifully defending for a majority of that match. It's just when you face Bolivia, and who's the other team that's not Uruguay? Who is it?
Panama.
Yeah. They're going to concede possession, and we're going to be on the front foot, and it's like, can you break it down? And we see no evidence so far. But I'm just convinced that this is going to be very similar to the World Cup. Hopefully it's similar to the World Cup, to be honest, where hopefully we can tie Uruguay 0-0 or 1-1. Like, that's a result for us. And then you could beat the other two teams, and then you advance, and then you see what happens. And, like, that's, I guess, worst-case scenario for the take economy and for the speculation that is involved, but it's best case scenario for the team. But it leaves us in this place, and yeah, I'm part of the take economy where it's like, can they turn it on if they make it to the knockouts, which we have to assume they will. There's no evidence that, and they know that, and they have to make it work.
So we'll right now the US men's national team, no, sorry, that's 20 days ago. That's not that useful. But at the beginning of March, okay, so this is how I'll frame the question. At the beginning of March, the U.S. men's national team is tied for the fifth lowest odds to win Copa America this summer. Do you think that the performance over the course of this tournament has improved those odds at all?
I think a little, where it comes to, like, we could play Mexico with what seemed like a hostile crowd, frankly.
Yeah, to put it mildly,
and run them off the field. I mean, by the end
of the
second half,
not just to us, but also to gay people.
Yes, we, by the end of the second half, we ran them off the field. And if you can bring that performance to Panama and Bolivia, I think you deserve better odds to win. I would say so. I think we're up there. You know, I want to see in the knockouts. Do we face Alex Callens in Peru? Do we face, like, can we face those mid-level South American teams? What will they bring us? I guess Uruguay is upper mid-level, and you know, it's hard. It's an unknown. We haven't played in a Copa America in a long time, so I'm excited. It's exciting, if anything. It's just it is going to be teeth gnashing with all the unknowns.
Trey, let's talk about a different tournament, sure. A more domestic tournament.
Sure.
The Open Cup.
Okay.
And NYCFC2's sterling 3-0 performance against Motown FC, a team on average, what, 15 years their senior? Certainly not the same pedigree by any means. But still, this was a more dominant result than we expected. Is that fair?
100%. Yeah. It was awesome. Watched a majority of it. And the kids were so good. Like, I kept on texting people like, they're better than they were last year, which is the expectation, but it's surprising nonetheless.
I don't know if it was the expectation. We lost a lot of clutch.
We did.
NYCFC 2 players. We lost the Golden Boot winner. There's no reason to expect that this team would be better. You can't expect that from a development league. Because it's entirely dependent on a lot of factors. In terms of how the team wants to run the way that it runs that side, whether they want to monetize it or whether they want to pursue results. And I think we saw a little of both in the offseason on this side, and that's why it was so surprising to see the talent escalate the way that it did in this match.
You're right. I would say you're right. We're missing key pieces that left last year, and Kwaku Owusu seemed to be, who had his first team contract canceled, is still with the team, but was out with probably an injury or illness for this match. I guess it was, you expect the young players to get better. I was not expecting them to be this much better. Carrizo, Shore, Baera, Aruyave, still need to learn how to say his name. Those four kids are just, they just look so confident and energetic, and the press was wild, and they were constantly had putting pressure and had possession, and like, it was so good to see like Shore and Carrizo like dictating play, and not like in a maestro kind of way, a Maxi Morales kind of way, but just in a, you know, they get the ball, they know they have the speed to change the point of attack, so they did. So when they knew if they had a certain amount of space, they could run into a different space, and it would create chances for other players, and they would pass, and it was brilliant to watch. And then leading the line, someone we didn't talk about because we thought they had left the NYCFC universe. Little did we know, like the day before the MLS Next Pro season started, that Taylor Calhera, I have no idea how to say his name, our second draft pick of two. We tossed him to the wayside, who is like a Malachi Jones light in terms of a lot of similar skills, just not at that high of a development level. But I don't mean light because he has like 50 pounds on Malachi and really works as a line leading number nine for this young squad, was phenomenal. And that I pretty much expected because his underlying numbers in college were really impressive on the dribble and scoring and things like that. But his ability to work in conversation with the young guys is really fun. And I think the defenders did really well as well. They stepped up. And so all across the board, really impressed. That being said, we're facing Red Bull too. And that is a team that is very good. And they have been. And they have 20 plus 30 years of experience developing a second team. They know what they're doing, and they are farther along the process than we are when it comes to maybe not developing individual talents, even though they're clearly very good at that. We just talked about Tyler Adams, but they are very good at fielding a team of developmental players. I would say much more so than us. We certainly have a chance to win, and I think we can, just based on that last game alone that we won in the Open Cup. Just seeing at the higher level of understanding that the young players on this team have achieved. And Matt Pilkington, give him his flowers. Like, not the best season last year in terms of results, but his ability to get quality play out of individuals is impressive. And I would not be surprised if Nick Cushing does, in fact, say his sweet goodbyes, that Pilkington is not on a short list of coaches they consider for the senior team.
Mm-hmm.
Considering the young players we have.
Well, and it only becomes more so the further that they get into this tournament. And that's the thing that I want to talk about, too, is, right, like, all of these, to be an NYCFC 2 player is to be constantly on display for getting to the next level of your career. And what's different about the abominable way that MLS has treated the Open Cup this year is that it gives those players the biggest stage that they will have in their time on this side to demonstrate that. I think that NYCFC 2 players are particularly acutely aware, because they are part of the CFG system, that is true. And I think that you will see, I think that you will see balls to the wall performances from these players as long as they are in the Open Cup. The match is Tuesday, April 2nd. It will be a fun match to catch. It's a mini Hudson River rivalry. It's worth watching, I'd say.
Sure. We might even see like a Malachi Jones. We might see some other first team players there. Romero. Some other guys. They might be involved.
Could be cool. Could be fun. Trey, before we get into the Miami pre-cap, which I'm both eagerly anticipating and dreading, I feel an obligation to ask how your bracket is going. Warning, I have nothing to say about March Madness.
Great. We'll keep it short and sweet. Looking at my bracket, which I did not do a lot of research on, and some key results did not go my way, I'm only in the 48th percentile of America.
Oof.
I am slightly below average, and that is not...
My friend who's a cartographer is in the... Well, no, I think she's in the 90th now.
Oh,
but she was in the 99th until this weekend.
Lord have mercy. But my college is in the baby tournament called the NIT, which is like where the losers are. Where the guys who couldn't get in the big dance. And they have two upsets in a row, and they made it to the Elite Eight of that tournament. So I'm excited. VCU Rams, go Rams, go!
Congratulations to the Rams. And wait, and didn't James Madison just have like a big upset?
They had one, and then they lost. I think
they lost. They're out now.
They lost the next match, but that first upset was huge.
I tried to Google my way out of not saying that, but it's too late. Have you been watching all these reaction videos to Caitlin Clark on TikTok or whatever?
You know,
I know you don't have TikTok.
This stupid podcast.
It's all reels anyways.
This stupid podcast interrupted. I was watching. Apparently, they just won by 10, but they didn't have the best game ever. I watched half of it. Of course, I watched Caitlin Clark. You know why? She's Italian. She's Sicilian. We have to, you know, I hold it close. It was so nice
have
to
no
switch
choice but to stand
to switch between Caitlin Clark, Italian women's sharpshooter, and Dante DiVincenzo of the Knicks, Italian men's sharpshooter. I think he was on the way of breaking the Knicks 3-point record before we recorded. Let's do a little live update, shall we? That means nothing to the audience, but it means a lot to me. Let's see if Dante DiVincenzo broke the Knicks record for 3-pointers in a match. I think he did because he did. He shot 11. The record was 10. Italian sharpshooters, now is the time, which is not what you want to hear if you're living in the days of lead in the 50s and 60s in Italy. But
very good. Very good sociology inclusion. Trey. With a largely unchanged roster and a potentially and a potential battle against the greatest player of all time in Miami away, is there any world in which NYCFC does anything anyone is happy to see in this match?
Let's do a live experiment. Jake, What date do we play Miami?
The 30th.
And go ahead, Google CONCACAF Champions League schedule and take a look at what Miami's playing. I know this is awful for audio, but it's fun for me.
Oh, I can only type with one hand.
What, you masturbating during the podcast?
Yeah, dude. I don't have time otherwise. I gotta get this one off. Where the fuck is it? That's not what I should have got.
I know, I should have brought this up before. I said just let's make this a game and an experiment.
Not the heat.
Because I'm lazy.
Fuck's sake. Just show me the matches. I assume it's a close time. It's close.
Yes, it's close. Later.
It's 2 days from now. It's tomorrow. It's something.
Now I'm looking it up. But you know, all I'm saying is
I'm putting together the context clues, and it's suggesting that we might be playing a fatigued.
Yes, it's the game after. Mm-hmm. And then
okay,
means,
so we might be the rest match. They might throw us some table scraps. Is
who
what
knows,
you're saying.
Right? I don't know. It's hard to say.
Is that
say.
Our only hope? Is kind of my question.
100%, because when Miami has all their best players on the field, I've watched all of their games, and they certainly are one of the best teams in MLS, bar none. I mean, it's not even close. That just what Messi and it's so weird, right? It's. They're one of the best teams in MLS, and it doesn't even look like it because half of their players are walking. They don't really play defense. It's just their ability to turn the game on its head anytime they choose is what's so scary and what makes them so good. They're like, it's so weird. They're like, I've never seen it in this league before, a team that is so good without being good 80% of the time they play. Yet you know that they're so good because you still see in that other 80% like moments where you know that the knife is at the throat of the opponent. They just haven't pushed, you know? So it's hard to say. Like, Messi's been injured for two straight matches. In one of them, Miami did really well. And in the last one against Red Bull, which was in the rain, the pouring rain that we had on Saturday, if you remember, they looked awful, and Red Bulls ran all over them. So, but I would rather take that as kind of an anomaly. They're going to be at home. The weather certainly will be much nicer. The thing about this match is that Tata Martino does not give a fuck about Luis Suarez's knees. And, like, watching Luis Suarez in this season has told me two things. One, his knees are fucking shot. And two, he is definitely, in my opinion, in the running for MVP. His ability to just change, just like Messi, obviously, right? But Messi's been injured. Messi missed all the Argentina games. He missed the last two Miami games. He's just unavailable. Is he going to be available? Are we going to see 20 minutes of Messi? Are we going to see 90 minutes? Are we going to see 0 minutes? I don't know. And it's not worth talking about Messi because we all know what he brings. We all know what he can do. It's about Suarez to me. He's the one that elevates right. this team from Messi pulling a shitty team across a finish line to a...
Yeah, if you look at the recaps, the conversation is generally, not generally, but generally been about Suarez's addition to this team, even more so than Messi's full season.
It's what we see over and over again. It's like what Zlatan brought, right? It's like...
Yes.
Just don't let the ball get to his feet anywhere near the box, because he can score, because he's been doing it for two decades or whatever. Like... This is a guy that just knows how to score. I'm shocked. I was not expecting him to be this good, but he is. And a lot of that is, of course, Messi, but a lot of that is his own ability. Like, we now see that he can do it without Messi, and that's what's terrifying. But the Rebels just ran all over them, and it's like, you got to be physical, you got to be fast, and you have to fucking keep the ball and keep the ball away from them. Can we do that on the road? Well, we're going to have a lot of our players back. Are we going to see the level of fight and defensive stronghold that we saw against Cincinnati? And can we pair that with the level of offensive fluidity, et cetera, that we saw in our last home match? I don't know. I hope so, because that's what it's going to take. I don't know if this is the kind of game, like, it's hard to predict, because we have no idea who's going to play, because they're in the CONCACAF Champions League, and because Messi's been injured. I don't know. But as a meta look, is this the game that, like, if we lose embarrassingly, cost Nick his job? I don't know. And I would say I don't think so, because it's on the road against Miami. It doesn't matter who's on the field, because they're going to have at least one superstar on the field. But that's why it can be a tone setter for the rest of the next four home matches we have. That's the game. We can't predict who's going to play, how it's going to go. We can predict that this game, the result is going to set the tone and set the table for how the team approaches the homestand, which is also going to be against difficult teams. Like, can they build the courage so that they can beat an Atlanta, an objectively, like, more consistently tough team at home, to be determined? And it will be determined by this Miami game.
Do you think, like, is there even a style of play that we can advocate for here, right? Like, where, if we get a goal against Miami, which I think should be, I mean, to me anyways, is Dayenu, right?
Mm-hmm.
That, where does it come from? Is it just a question of a more effective Santi Rodriguez driving, finding a moment of magic?
Yeah, it's going to be, I think the press is going to be important. I'm happy that the team has been drilling and looked more gelled in its press in the last 2-3 weeks, because that's going to be super important to disrupting Miami's run of play. And also, you know, having Bakrar and his ability to press is going to be huge. And also working in transition, something we have not been great at. But we see flashes, right? I think in Cincinnati we saw one, maybe two runs of play where we went from box to box in four passes. Obviously the team has to do that much more often, but especially against Miami, where you have one center back who's very solid, but he's also a 37-year-old old Ukrainian guy who doesn't have the ability to chase down forwards on the back foot. And then the other side, you have Toto Aviles, who I'm a big fan of as a center back prospect, who was the golden boy of Agustin Ojeda's class at Racing, but is a super aggressive defender and seems to, his aggressiveness can help him snuff out attacks, but also has put Miami in some bad situations as well this season. Can you take advantage of that too? That's going to lead to, in transition, can you be unselfish, and can you be in rhythm in transition? In the chaotic moments, can we find a rhythm? Now, we have not. I can't remember the last time we have, but this is the game where we'll know. We'll know if we still can, or if it's a lost cause.
What's your scoreline? Your honest scoreline, Trey.
Honest?
Let's be honest with these children.
I do think they're playing Monterey, you know? That's not a fucking pushover team, and that's a more important game on the following Wednesday. Messi probably won't play. You know, if the over-under is 45 minutes, you're taking the under no matter what. I would say the honest scoreline is probably a 2-1 loss. Callender's a fantastic goalkeeper. But is there more of a chance to win this game than Cincinnati? Certainly. Certainly, certainly. And given the performance we put up against Cincinnati, at least at playing for the tie and doing pretty well at it, I would say that there's a much higher chance we could end up with a tie in this match than we had a chance to against Cincinnati, for sure.
Okay, you heard it here first, folks. I'd love to see a tie here. I'd love it. Nobody would say boo to that. Just as a momentum turner. We can only hope for it. But I'm not optimistic, but at the very least, I'd like to see some fun, good soccer, you know?
I'd like to see
some energy, and I'd like to see some urgency. And I'll be a broken record about it this season, but I just want to see, I don't like playing for the tie, and I don't think that playing for the tie is how we get the tie most of the time. I don't see that. That hasn't been successful yet. This is my smooth-brained opinion. My, like, you know, this player good, this player bad opinion. I don't see that mentality paying off on the field in a holistic way. But what the fuck do I know? Trey, where do you tweet at?
Trey Fillmore, what about you?
At Jake Beckhard, and you can find me and Trey both at Blue Balls Pod. You know it, you love it, you tip it when you go to cash.me/$blueballs or search Blue Balls NYCFC in the Cash app and drop a dollar in the tip jar to help us keep the lights on. If you want something in return for your generous donation, why not buy a shirt or a mug or a hat? They're all available at our merch store. You can find that on linktr.ee/blueballsnycfc. And beyond that, I've got absolutely nothing else. We'll see you next week following the Miami match. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you then. Bye.
Bye.